YouTube. See you there.
Hi, Juan Flores here, inviting you to listen in to Jazz Latino here every Tuesday at noon with the absolute best of Afro-Cuban Latin jazz. 2 hours of great music. Hope you can join me Tuesday at noon right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My guest co-host today is Andrew.
Andrew Ferguson. How y'all doing, folks?
I'm never sure if I should use last name. Some people don't like it.
Oh,
some
really?
People do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Okay, good. I've had people even don't want me to tell who's, you know, the name of the engineer. So
I guess it makes sense. I mean, some people, you know, when they get to politics, you know, some people can get a bit rambunctious about it.
We do have some pseudonymous people,
yes,
at the station.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. I probably should be one of them.
Well, I mean, this is a call-in show.
It is a call-in show. Speaking of which, the phone number is 713-526-5738. Remember that there are some people that do have an election coming up, state legislature. I think there are two districts in Harris County that have that right now. So check at harrisvotes.com, see if you're among those folks, and if you are, vote. Let's see. So, first topic. Apparently, the state is going through one of its periodic, and this is actually a very interesting issue both ways, going through one of its periodic investigations of whether they should stay with elected judges or go to some kind of appointed judges, either appointed for a term and then they come up for election, or appointed and reappointed, or evaluated by a board of lawyers and judges, or, you know, nonpartisan. And as the article says, there's an interesting quote here. Let's see if I can find it. Basically, what it here, good judges support all these systems, and good judges hate all of them. I think that's a great quote from the article. It's called, Voters Elect Judges, the State Might Take That Power, But It's Risky. There are pros and cons. I mean, the fact is that down-ballot races, even if they vote for president and governor and lieutenant governor and all of these high-profile races, very often by the time you get to the down-ballot stuff, even the people that have gotten to the polling place don't vote.
Right.
Because, you know, judges, they don't campaign much. They don't like to in most cases. Another point in the article that's made is in the last election, Harris County cleaned out basically all the Republican judges, both the good and the bad, and they elected all the Democratic judges, both the good and the bad. I mean, this, I don't know that anything is going to change because it's politically fraught.
Right.
But it is a really interesting, if nothing else, a thought question.
Sure.
You know, who has the time to research like 50 judges?
Yeah. And is the, you know, judges fill this position in our society of like arbitrators of the law. The politicians make the laws. They have a specific idea for how they want things to go. And then it's the responsibility of the judges to not take their intentions in mind, but to look at what happened when the law was broken and look at the text of the law to kind of to take some of the partisanship out of the law in some ways. But of course, like, you know, electing judges kind of flies in the face of that, I think.
Well, I mean, what you say is interesting, but I partially disagree.
Okay.
They are supposed to take, or at least they often are supposed to take into account the intent behind the law. So you've got the letter of the law,
right?
The spirit of the law, and then you've got the specific circumstances of the case in front of you.
Right.
And then you've also got, in some cases, mandatory guidelines that take discretion away from the judge. And then the question is that good or bad?
Mm.
And partisanship, you know, there are, I have no doubt, there are good Republican judges, but then you get into mindset.
Mm.
Good by whose standards?
Right.
Are they compassionate? Are they letter of the law? Are they legislative minded in a sense?
Mm.
And, you know, you do get to a point, especially in down ballot races, but I think especially given the partisanship of the current times, you do get to a point where, to some extent, you rely on political philosophy.
Right.
And then you get, and I'm gonna move on from this because this could take up an hour.
Mm.
But then you also get into the situation of you have people running, like Republicans running as Democrats.
Right.
Or Democrats.
Right.
I mean, this literally happens.
Yeah,
I have seen this literally happen, where you have opportunistic politicians, whether it's for like a county judgeship or, you know, like the equivalent of dog catcher or something
right.
You have people that are opportunistic and they will run on whichever party, because parties generally don't restrict who can call themselves whatever.
Yeah.
They'll run on whatever party they think is going to win.
Yeah.
I once had a candidate that I was kind of personally supporting, and when she decided she was going to register as a Republican for a race, it's like, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem with, you know, political parties, that this has been brought up in, you know, many a discussion over ever since the country was founded, I'm sure, is that they're supposed to be, you know, coalitions of people who are like-minded coming together to put forward their idea of what government should be. But as they get bigger and bigger and bigger and try to appeal to more and more people, they become less like-minded and they become more about, they become part of the system instead of, you know, people who are trying to set how the system works. So you will get situations where people will switch their banner.
They become institutionalized.
Yeah, they become institutionalized. People switch their banner, yeah,
not in a mental case.
No, yes. They become part of the institution.
Right.
Yeah. They switch their banners, not because they agree or disagree, their personal beliefs change, but because it's just, that's just the part of the institution that has a better chance for them.
There used to be a presidential candidate, Stanford something. I can't remember the name exactly.
Okay.
But there was a point in the 1940s where he was a legitimate presidential candidate.
Right.
And after that, he just kept running until he died.
Hmm.
And it became an adjective.
Yeah.
You know, that this, his name became an adjective for people that just keep running until they either win or die, literally.
Yeah.
So this is a call-in show, so we've already got a topic that I think could be interesting. 713-526-5738. Okay, another thing, and by the way, the first article was from the Texas Tribune. This one is also from the Texas Tribune. A ballot box. This is interesting. It also has implications. A ballot box found weeks after Election Day has flipped a $569 million high school bond vote in Midland.
Hmm.
So, apparently, the bond issue, let's see, it was actually complicated. Out of like 30,000 votes cast, ultimately, it kept flipping back and forth by about 26 votes.
Okay.
So, for people who think their votes don't matter.
Hmm.
So, I think first it failed, and then it passed. No, it passed, and then it failed, and then it passed, and then it failed.
Hmm.
But the interesting part of this is that it finally failed after it was technically certified. They found a ballot box. This was weeks after it was certified by the Secretary of State.
Right.
Apparently, there were questions about the, you know, the count. But, you know, you have a number of elections. Georgia is a good example, where it's like, well, we found ballots, but, you know, the election's already been certified. Or the 2000 presidential election where, hey, the Supreme Court already decided it, and it's been certified by the Secretary of State in Florida, but, gee, there are still ballots that haven't been recounted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is interesting, not just for the detail of it, you know, in Midland, Texas, which is a moderate-sized city.
Right.
This is the kind of issue that really has implications for every election at the top, middle, or bottom of the ballot.
Yeah.
At what point is there a point where once an election is certified, by hook or by crook, I might add, if there is a point where if they find ballots in the post office that weren't properly delivered or whatever, there have been allegations for a lot of different things. Does a certification really matter if there are, in fact, ballots that have not been properly counted?
Yeah. And I think there is kind of a precedent that's been set already for this by, I mean, because this happens a lot, as you've mentioned. But the sort of precedent to me seems to be that after the election results are declared done, they don't count anything else, except in like some rare circumstances.
Which seems reasonable,
on its face. Yeah.
Unless you have been finagling to hide ballots.
Yeah, or unless...
Or they're lost.
Yeah.
Good faith lost.
Yeah, and from the voter's perspective, it seems like a good idea until the thing that you want to happen, the election doesn't go the way you want it to happen, and it could have gone if these ballots were counted. So, you know,
as the phrase goes, depending on whose ox is gored.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, it's totally fair to want to have a cutoff point, but, you know,
it's totally fair to want to have your ballot counted.
Exactly, same thing.
So, I mean, I'm raising my hands and shrugging my shoulders right now. It's like, you know, this is, again, one of those issues where right and wrong are not clear.
Yeah.
Which would be a thing that a judge might decide.
Yeah.
Where a political philosophy, either leaning Democratic or leaning Republican, leaning liberal, leaning conservative, even with a good faith effort to be fair.
Yeah.
You can't expect judges to divorce themselves from their lives.
Sure.
So, you know, again, this gets back to what's right.
Yeah.
Right can be a very slippery thing. This is a call-in show. The phone number is 713-526-5738. We are open forum, so you can discuss something that we've brought up or anything that you might have noticed that is interesting. My guest co-host today is Andrew Ferguson.
Hello.
And we do have a caller now. Gary, you're on the air. How are you doing today?
Mike, I'm good. This is sort of off topic, but not really.
Well, it's open forum, so there is no off topic.
No, but it's we listen because we like the general, you know, drift of the conversation.
Well, thank you.
But I want to throw something past you. Okay?
Okay.
Have you heard about? I guess you know about the book, A Very Stable Genius.
I've heard of it.
Okay. Have you read any excerpts? There's some in the Washington Post, New York Times. Not excerpts, but
Yes. Was it Maggie Haberman is a co-author on this, I think?
I don't know. It's about the meeting that Tillerson...
Yes,
Mattis,
where he ended up leaving and calling the president an effing moron.
Yes, but the whole story now is it's unbelievable how incredibly... this was a turning...
Whoop.
I'm here.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
All right, this was a turning point for a lot of the people and a lot of things going on. Anyway, I was reading that, and then I saw some other stories about issues with presidential health. And I thought, there's my idea. Why not have not an IQ test or a political loyalty test or, you know, religious test, but have a basic presidential fitness test for the 25th Amendment considerations and divide it into five categories and mandate that a minimum of 80% in each category.
Which 20% are you willing to do away with? If, you know, four out of five ain't bad.
The five for this, I think, are relative to intelligence, education, cognizance, and whether you have narcissistic personality disorder or some other disease. So they would be basic history, because they noted that he had no understanding of history. Number two, basic geography. You know, anyone that calls Bhutan.
Oh, we're going to if we're going to go through the whole list in detail, I think we've got to abbreviate.
I've only got five. That's what I want you to say. If
okay.
You add any? All right. So.
Oh, I absolutely have some. I mean, without having a list in front of me off the top of my head. If they declare, I don't even want to wait for the nomination. If they declare for an office, as far as I'm concerned, they should release 5 to 10 years of tax returns minimum. They should release a health checkup so we know if they, you know, and maybe they need to know if they have like an early stage cancer or heart problems or psychiatric issues. I mean, those are just off the top of my head, and I think that should be done.
You know, here's the issue. You say that an educated electorate, right?
Yeah, educated electorate, prerequisite for democracy.
Okay, now, but nobody addresses an educated elector. That is one that we are, as an educated electorate, electing. Now, let me finish my five. It would be
you're basically talking about an IQ test.
Basic English language. Civics, that is, how does government work, and then five is wide open. But these are the four areas that the book says that this individual was deficient in, yet he's running the world. Hello?
Well, I mean, I don't disagree on the general, I'm going to say substance, but really that's not what we're talking about. I don't disagree with your general concept. I do think, now, you know, IQ tests are dicey because it's almost impossible to design one that isn't culturally biased.
That would never work.
Well, for something like a political candidate, it would work because you want some cultural knowledge and you want some cultural information.
That's not IQ. That's not intelligence.
But
that
is what is on IQ tests. I mean,
The other option would lower the age to be able to be elected president legally down to like eighth grade.
No.
Because then you'd have an equivalent situation here.
No.
And that's what I'm saying, is that anyone that's in charge of the largest, most powerful military and economy on the planet Earth should know the difference between the Balkans and the Baltics.
Yes.
Okay? That's the issue, is that the fitness for office, and I'll let it go.
I appreciate that. I mean, I agree with you in principle, and I think it comes down to the details, which is always where the devil is. Thanks for calling, Gary. I appreciate it very much.
Good to talk to you.
You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. My guest co-host today, I keep stumbling over that, I don't know why, is Andrew Ferguson. And Johnny, you are on the air. How are you doing today?
So far, so good. I'll let you know in another few months.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Go ahead.
Listen, I agree with your instinct to drop your support for a candidate who switches to the Republican Party. And that is a testament
period.
What you and your guests are claiming beforehand, and that is people who switch parties because it's convenient. Now, there might be some truth in that.
Oh, I know there's truth in it.
I'm automatically suspicious of anyone who goes to the R. And I'm not totally on board with anyone who goes, especially from the R to the D, because that would be a convenience factor. My judgment has to go based on their voting record, if they have one, what they say in debate with other people, and their background. That's what I have to go by. And if there's an endorsement from TYT, I'll take a second look at him.
TYT, okay, that's an interesting qualification. I've said this a number of times. I think since I was in my late teens, early 20s, I don't think that I have philosophically changed much. I've sort of evolved on certain issues, but my basic political ideology, I think, has been pretty firm. Which is why I often say I'm the most conservative liberal at the station. You know, in the 70s, I was a centrist. Now I'm a leftist because the center has moved so much.
Maybe there's another factor involved.
Go ahead.
There's another reason involved here. You got more woke.
Well, like I said, I mean, I've evolved. I've come to different understandings of certain issues, or the circumstances around certain issues have changed. But I think that the core of what makes me lean one way or the other on a specific issue, I don't think that's changed much. People that change from a really liberal to a really conservative or vice versa. I'm always a little suspicious of that because, at least in my head, I don't understand how someone can flip that radically, you know, like they suddenly get woke to being a conservative. They suddenly get woke to being a liberal. I've just never been able to grasp that.
Right. They have to be able to document to my satisfaction, and I have to see them over time. I'm not going to trust them within a six-month span because now they're running for office. That's not good enough. I'm sorry.
Well, it's the old saying, and Rachel has used this a lot, you know, watch what they do, not what they say. And
I think you need to have
a track record that shows where you have been in your life, even if in your life you have moved over time. You know, my views of gay marriage, I mean, it didn't even used to be an issue when I was a teenager. It was all closeted. And then it was like, well, you've got different evolutions of that. And it took me a while, and it took hearing and reading things and talking to gay people and finally coming to sort of an understanding and a grasp of an acceptance of the distinctions between things like civil unions and marriage and why it matters to them and why it shouldn't matter to me and those kinds of things. That's an evolution, and that's not a change of philosophy. That's just a growing understanding with age and experience.
Mm-hmm. There's one dynamic I want to share with you, and then I'll hang up, and I want to hear your interpretation on
okay.
it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I've been liberal progressive my entire life, since I was, as far as I can remember, when I first started tracking news and politics back when I was 8 or 9 years old. That doesn't mean to say that I would automatically consider myself a Democrat or a straight-down party Democratic voter. I only voted for Republican one time in my life, and that was a protest vote for Ronald Reagan. That was the first and only time. Now, that having been said, you've got to ask yourself, if you're a person of influence in the Democratic Party, do you plan to acknowledge that there are lots of voters like me who have felt disenfranchised and can be a one-candidate person, like we did in 2016 with Bernie? They need to recognize this, and they need to heal, to use Hillary Clinton's words, and I want to know if you agree or disagree and why.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. If that's okay, I'll answer on the air.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
I think that, I mean, I'll have to tell you, and this, I say this with some shame. The first presidential election I was old enough to vote in when the voting age was 21 was in 1972. It was Nixon versus George McGovern.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, man, I was really torn because Nixon was Nixon and George McGovern was really considered very left for 1972.
Hmm.
And I really wasn't happy with either choice. And I remember I went into one of these old-style voting booths with the lever and the curtain and the clicking things. And I was so torn that I was actually going to write in a vote. Mm. And I actually, there was a window that you would open that would expose paper. But once you had done that, you couldn't go back to the levers anymore. You had to write something.
Okay.
Because otherwise you might vote twice.
Right.
And I really struggled with this. And I was going to write in some third party or third person. You should empathize with this, Andrew.
I do.
And finally, I wrote in Nixon.
Okay.
So my very, very first vote was for Richard Nixon.
Hmm.
And I've had to live with that.
Hmm.
But, you know, also in New York City, they had liberal Republicans like Jacob Javits, and they had John V. Lindsay. And I know I voted for John Lindsay for mayor, and I may or may not have had an opportunity to vote for or against Jacob Javits. But, yeah, you had sort of relatively conservative liberal Democrats and relatively liberal conservative Republicans.
So the idea.
But
for
that
you,
has changed dramatically, right, to the point where I mean, any Republican at this point I don't trust because of the pressures of the party.
Right.
So the best I can do is to vote straight Democrat because I don't see an option right now.
So when you were growing up, the idea that a candidate might be more than their party was very much a realistic thing.
Yeah,
for you.
You actually could look at a person and balance their views without automatically making assumptions based on their party affiliation.
Right. And nowadays it's
But that I was mean, that was 40 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays you still get people who aren't what you would expect from a member of that party, but it tends to be in a way that is an unpleasant surprise, like with Blue Dog Democrats or with, you know...
But Blue Dog Democrats, for the places they have been elected...
Right.
Are Blue Dog Democrats because of the places where they have been elected.
Right.
So, you know, I can't love them as a liberal Democrat bringing my New York City political ethnicity with me.
Right.
But a Democrat in Alabama has to be a different Democrat from the one I would prefer to vote for. So you are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. This is actually an open forum. We're very chatty today. Mm. And the number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Okay, I know Scott is waiting. I'm just going to touch on a topic, and then I'm going to go to Scott. The Trump administration, this is also from the Texas Tribune. I was looking for, like, local and Texas news today, and there it was. The Trump administration sets into motion the return of online 3D gun blueprints. In other words, guns you can print with a 3D printer.
Yes.
This has been an issue going back and forth through regulation and the courts and regulation. And apparently now the Trump administration, or regime if you wish, with all the other great policies that they're doing by fiat, has decided this is cool. Mm. And of course, one of the issues that is argued about this, aside from the whole gun rights issue, is if it's printed in a plastic,
mm-hmm.
how do you detect it when it's going through
a metal
security?
Detector, security?
Exactly.
Right,
now,
exactly.
Some people say, like in the article, they mention, well, the bullets have to be metal. But,
yeah.
You know, there's always something. And the gun itself is the issue, the weapon.
Right.
I mean, if you point a weapon at somebody, you don't know if there are bullets in it, and you don't want to find out.
Mm.
So there's that. Okay, let me go to Scott, or when I can, we'll go to Scott. So this article, the rule change apparently will go on the official record on January 23rd, and then there's a 45-day waiting period before it becomes official.
Well, I want to quickly say this.
And Scott, we'll get to you as soon as we can. Hold
yeah.
on a moment.
I mean, the problem with, you know, this is a question of, sure, it's a question of gun rights, but it's also a question of how do you restrict access to a digital file?
And there's also the fact it's already been downloaded 100,000 times.
Exactly.
So it's like the genie's out of the bottle.
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at, that trying to say here, is that really, you know, even if the government wants to ban 3D printed weapons, I mean, the files, once they're created, are very easy to spread in
it's
ways
digital.
That...
It's digital. It's not even like copy degradation.
And this is the problem that a lot of copyright holders have found as well. And you
well,
know,
they say that a patent is just a ticket to patent court.
Sure,
and
sure.
I am familiar with that.
Yeah, and so it's going to be very difficult to actually have concrete and effective restriction on digital files.
Okay, I think we can go to Scott now. Scott, you're on the air. Thanks for being patient with us.
Thank you. I think Bernie Sanders offers the full package, but I'm not convinced that enough voters are ready for the full package.
I think that he's sort of a grumpy old man, and I think of Grandpa Simpson, you know, old man yells at cloud.
Oh.
And I think that if I had to pick, I think Warren on many levels is a much better option than Bernie Sanders.
Okay, I'm thinking about Warren for the primary, but I still haven't decided completely.
Yeah, I understand.
Not going public. Well, I am public right this moment that I am not completely decided, actually.
And I understand there are, even with the pared down field of Democrats, there are still two or three or four good options, depending on, you know, your personal preferences, depending on the politics of electability and policy. I mean, I can understand why a lot of people are undecided. And I'll be honest, I've donated to probably five different campaigns. And there are two or three that I donate to that are still viable. So I totally get it.
Oh, I don't have the money for them right now.
I have
still.
I'm fortunate that I can.
In city campaigns, I did donate in city campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
I don't plan to donate anything in the presidential campaign or federal elections in general until there are definite nominees.
I totally understand. No. And, you know, and, I consider myself fortunate that I'm now at a point in my life where I can, and I make small donations, but I make them multiple times.
Yeah.
So it's like $5 10 times, something like that.
And I plant links on Facebook to encourage others.
Yeah.
Oh, and I plan to vote on February 18th, first day of early voting.
Yep.
By then, I think I have thought of enough about the presidential primary to make a decision. I am voting for Judge Stephen Kirkland. He has a contested primary. After all, the presidency is not the only race on the ballot.
Yeah, that's true. And it's been made plain many times that the local elections actually affect your life more than the state and national
elections. Yes, I haven't decided on the U.S. Senate. Probably vote for Sheila Jackson Lee in the my House district. Randy Rowe for state judge.
Okay, I don't think we're going to go down the whole ballot, Scott, if you don't mind.
Okay.
But I appreciate your due diligence. I really do.
Okay.
Okay, so thanks for calling, Scott. Is there anything else you want to add, or can we move on?
Oh, I think I'm finished.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Scott. Take care. Okay, we are doing Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Do remember that KPFT is community supported.
Oh, yes, we are.
Currently 100% community supported. We're not working on grants or anything like that.
Right, exactly.
It's what you see is what you paid for.
Yeah.
So kpft.org, and you can go there and you can click on a link and hopefully pick this show. But, you know, it's kind of like eating. It all goes into the same place.
That's true.
But, you know, it's also kind of like ratings. So if you pick a show, it's like, hey, we like that show.
Yeah.
So kpft.org, also my website where you can go and see all the links and excerpts and stuff that I don't have time for on the air. You can go to thinkwingradio.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, where I can be a little bit more edgy, at ThinkWing Radio. I sometimes get a little outside this box on that. And Facebook, where I have my ThinkWing Radio Facebook page, because I am unimaginative. Mm. So, 713-526-5738. Next up is M.O.D. M.O.D., you're on. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
I think the Sanders is becoming more or less the populace.
I'm sorry, say that again, please?
Sanders is
becoming... Oh, Sanders. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we're breaking up a little.
His last name's Sanders.
No, you were breaking up a little, so I thought I heard Anders, and I'm going, Okay,
and
go ahead.
You think he's getting a little bit on the populace side as he was in 2016. He's coming up on the percentage of more desirable lately, right?
Well, I think that as far as the Democratic electorate has gone, I think that the whole electorate generally has moved further to the left. So I think that a little more socialist, a little more liberal, I think has become more palatable to people that used to be a little more to the right of that.
Now, that's great news for me.
Yeah, well, yes and no.
The reason why I want to comment on that, Mike, and Andrew, is that when I see the hit squads come out and start doing the usual campaigning to maybe not attack his populist views, because that's going to carry the way for the Democratic Party, what we've seen in the past and what we're seeing right now is attacking the character, turning him into a misogynist. When you see people like O'Keefe, was it Veritas?
The right wing hit guy that basically takes tapes and edits them.
Megan McCain.
Mm.
And when I see all these people come out of the woodwork in the last couple of weeks and they're attacking his character, the Bernie Bros, and he's a misogynist, what they're going to do is they're going to assassinate his character, but not the populist ideology. So that's how this carries into this election cycle. And then when Tom Perez, you know, made sure folks like Bloomberg can get in, by, you know, changing the voting when if you don't have 51% out of those 10 or 12 folks going to the primary, that would be the first vote.
Well, no, it wasn't a matter of getting them in the primary. It was a matter of getting them in the debates.
Okay, well, we're talking about when we come to the primary, Mike, in March.
Yeah.
And when one of those candidates does not get 51% of the vote, Perez is going to make sure that the capitalists that, you know, the two parties represent, like a Biden or, hell, Bloomberg. How about this? Here's a scenario, Mike. Bloomberg comes in with 5 or 6% vote, right? But someone else doesn't get 51% of the vote. And guess what happens? Underneath Tom Perez's DNC rules of last year, there will be a second vote. So guess what happens then?
Well, I don't think that you can blame all of that on Tom Perez. I mean, you know, there
are... The only thing he's done since he's been in office... Is that?
Well, first of all, there has always been a rule that the first vote, at least as long as there have been primaries, that the first vote, they have to vote the way they are bound by the primary. If it goes past the first vote, it's always been a free-for-all. And actually, there are still enough, in my opinion, viable candidates that I could actually see going to the convention where no one has a majority on the first ballot.
That's
I can
right.
see that happening.
That's what the purpose of this 51% or none, bringing in the superdelegates in the second vote. People like Bloomberg can come in with a 5 or 6% and get, and who's going to be calling him on the drive-in? The superdelegates, the... There's going to be, like, what, 771 superdelegates, and there's, like, 3,500 pledged. So I'm just saying, if they don't make sure Donald gets it, and they feel like the you know, they need somebody on the other side like Bloomberg or these other capitalists, who would that be, Biden, they can shoehorn those guys in, and then they can have either way. Can I add to that, on top of that?
Well, I will say that among the billionaires, I think that I like Bloomberg better than Steyer, but my preference would be neither.
You notice that the frequency or the occurrence of a wealthy individual like these coming into the election are starting to become more frequent. And, you know,
well, we have too many billionaires.
In New York, you have what? The calls to the prisons. You know, the guy knows how to make money. He uses call centers from prisons, right? You know about that.
I've heard of that. Yeah, we have prison labor in a lot of areas that would surprise people. It's not just license plates anymore.
I like the stop and frisk policy, you know, stereotyping. I mean, Bloomberg makes money because he's like Trump. He's just making money. And Trump doesn't really make money. Trump is just getting his name used by the hedge funds that bailed him out. So they're going to make sure a capitalist gets up there, unless it's time for a new narrative, like, say, the Andrew Wangs and the you know, sustainable stuff. Wait, you know what I'm talking about? Universal base pay or income?
Yeah. Andrew Yang, it is, with his freedom dividend.
Have you looked at his website yet?
I have not been to his website, but I did assist my wife in making a contribution.
Austerity. His policies... This is sort of a new order.
I'm sorry, who are we talking about now? We were just on Andrew Yang. Now who are you talking about?
Go to his website.
You're saying that Andrew Yang is an austerity candidate?
Yes. Look, I'm going to say it one third time. Go to his website and see the redirects to Milton Friedman Economics.
As far as I'm aware, with the freedom dividend, will actually
so-called
it's what he calls it.
Yeah.
It's designed to actually replace a lot of other income assistance that people receive, and it's.
I don't think he's made that plain.
I don't think.
I mean, I haven't been to the website, so I'm taking your word for it, Andrew and MOD. But he hasn't made that plain.
Yeah, I mean, and it wouldn't surprise me if he hasn't, because it's not something that I think would be very popular once, you know, people knew about it. But to my knowledge, he is trying to basically reduce the overall amount that the government is giving to people who need income assistance by giving them a sort of
money.
Blanket. Yeah, by giving them a one blanket check that's, you know.
So it's not tricky, it's not bureaucratic, it's just here's your check.
Yeah, it seems bigger, you know, because it's all on one check, it's actually a lot.
So MOD, thank you for bringing that up. Andrew, thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, real quick. Mike.
Yeah, have to be quick.
This is austerity, and his premise is based on Milton Friedman's South Chicago Economics. So go have your listeners go look for themselves. And to conclude, let's just say this, that we'll vote for two political parties, but ultimately they form the same executive dictatorship. What's been different since Reagan, guys? Ask that question.
I mean, I'm not going to get into that because as far as I'm concerned, anyone who says the two parties are the same, I vehemently disagree with. But I appreciate...
When we say Tom Perez will make sure Trump wins unless they have... a throwdown like Bloomberg or...
You're entitled to your opinion, but I got to let you go. Thank you for calling. You raised some good points, M.O.D. I appreciate some of that pointing.
Hmm.
I mean, I hate to say points and pointing, but they are two different things. I like that now I have a question about Andrew Yang that I was not aware of at all.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we've spent a little time about the Democratic primary, and I just like to quickly say... I plan to vote green regardless, but...
It's a binary thing.
I know you don't like that, Mike. I know.
Well, not... I don't like it for, like, state and federal elections. Mm-hmm. I don't like it for elections where you don't need a majority of the vote to win.
Right.
I'm not a plurality election guy.
Right.
I'm much better with it if you want to do it in, like, local elections.
Right.
So we can see how they govern.
Right. Well, our strategy... is to, well,
he's a green.
Yes. My strategy is to vote green wherever I can, but unfortunately, there's not a lot of greens in local elections in Texas for some weird reason.
That's because they want to focus on the high-profile, top-of-the-ballot stuff, and they don't want to deal with local messiness.
Well, it's also because...
The greens are not the only third party that have done that, but, you know, to me, that's going about it backwards.
I think it's more that Texas has some of the most restrictive ballot access laws in the nation, and the Green Party is currently...
You take it very personally.
The Green Party is currently working with a couple of other third parties. There's a court case going on to try and challenge some of those laws. But what I wanted to say was that I would rather we end up with a Democrat than a Republican, and of the Democrats, I would rather we end up with Bernie Sanders than anybody else.
Well, then that's that how point. You need to vote. Because mm-hmm. voting for the Green Party is a statement. It's not really a result.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. My guest co-host is Andrew Ferguson, and it is open forum. The phone number is 713-526-5738. I know John has been waiting a while. I just want to get to this one article that I think, because of MOD's points, sort of becomes relevant. There's an article on CNN Business, which I have a link to on my site, thinkwingradio.com. 22 men own more wealth than Africa's 326 million women, Oxfam says. And there's more that I can go into, but I don't want to hold Scott. But this is, you know, this is the concentration of wealth issue.
Sure.
At what point does it become more than, literally more than fair? At what point does it become... injurious to the economic health of a civilization, let's say? At what point does it become injurious to the social health of a civilization? At what point does the accumulation of wealth become so vast that it becomes destabilizing? So I want to get to John. Naboo, if you could put, we need to get Naboo's attention. If you could put John on, please. John, thank you for being so patient. You're on the air. What's going on?
Yeah, actually, Johnny, and the only reason why I'm calling back a second time is because you didn't answer my question, my friend.
I'm sorry.
I appreciated your story, but I just want to know if you think that the establishment leadership, the corporate-friendly establishment leadership of the Democratic Party, are they going to be stubborn this time around again, or are they going to wake up and say, listen, for the good of the country, not so much for the party, we need to support Sanders and not sabotage him like we did the last time?
I disagree with you on all those counts, which is why I answered the question the way I did. You're basically saying the Democratic Party should not go by the rules they're going by. They should change the rules to favor Sanders because that's who you think they should favor. I totally disagree, which is what makes it an election.
See, you're hearing things. You're putting things in my mouth. I didn't say they should change the rules to favor Sanders.
No, you're saying they should not
stop making up rules to hinder Sanders.
But that's your opinion. And that's the opinion
of...
That's
not an opinion. It's a fact.
It's an opinion.
They have a thing in place where they will not allow anyone who's a consultant for a what they call a progressive candidate who challenges an incumbent Democrat, not who to be excluded from the party's operations.
Well, that's the fact is that Sanders is strictly a Democrat of convenience. He's a dino. He's a Democrat in name only. He's an independent the whole rest of the time, except when he's running for president. He doesn't like Democrats. He caucuses with Democrats because they're the lesser evil than Republicans. He's not a Democrat. And it makes perfect sense that the Democratic hierarchy and a lot of voters like me don't like Sanders, don't think he should be running as a Democrat, think he should be running as a third party if that's what he wants to do. I mean, he's a Democratic socialist, so-called social Democrat. I don't know what the difference is. I mean, I disagree with your fundamental premise, well, and a lot of people do.
Hang on a second, and please, you know, if you'll indulge me here, Johnny, you said a lot when I brought
you
up,
being me or you being Johnny,
Mike. Yeah,
yeah.
Sorry. I keep forgetting this is a radio show and people can't see
and
my
there are
hand
three
gestures.
Of us.
Yeah. Mike, when people bring up the concept of third parties, you say that we live in a two-party system, and that, you know, participating in any other way is kind of pointless.
No, I say that in the context of plurality victories.
Okay. Well,
runoffs, I have a whole different concept.
Okay. Well, it seems to me like what you've just said kind of contradicts, you know, your approach to third parties, in that you say that Sanders should be running as a third party, but by running as a Democrat, he is acknowledging the existence of the two-party system. He's trying to work within it.
Which is, I might add, something you're not willing to do.
Sure,
but,
I'm not.
But the other side of that coin is, I can understand why the Democratic hierarchy would not favor someone who is a Democrat of convenience. I mean, we talked about party switching, and that's essentially what Sanders is.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat out of convenience. When it was necessary for him to stump for Hillary Clinton, he did exactly that.
Very little.
He stumped her left and right, up and down, seven ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
So don't give me that crap about...
Watch the language, Johnny. Johnny, you can be passionate.
Democrats, Mike.
You can be passionate, but I don't like where the language starts to go.
You've got to keep the FCC in mind, Johnny.
What language did I use?
Well, if I, you know, I don't
we
want to repeat it.
We
can say it, but I don't like the direction it's heading in.
Right. You said the C word, and we need to be careful about that.
The C word?
Yeah. It's...
All right, Johnny, I appreciate your call. I think we've kind of had this conversation now, unless you want to go on to... Well, okay. So thank you very much, Johnny. I appreciate your passion.
Mm.
I disagree with your concept, but you know, that's what makes a democracy. 713-526-5738. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. Remember that we need your support to keep this station on the air. KPFT.org is where you go to click on the donate tab. I believe next week we're going to be in fundraising mode. Well, actually in several days.
Mm.
But my show next week will be in fundraising mode. So this is a gentle reminder that we need you to help support the station. Only about 8% of listeners at any given time are supporting the station. Mm. And I'm not saying that I want to guilt the other 92% into not listening. What I want to do is invite you to join the community of people that do support the shows you want to listen to and help out occasionally.
If you can spare the money, we'll take it, and we can do great things with it.
We're not proud. $5 to $500. Anywhere in there, we're perfectly happy with.
And I think it's...
I actually had a donor. I tell this story several years ago. I had a donor who donated... It was a weird number, like $16.38. I don't remember the exact number, but it was around there. And when asked why that number, she said, well, she had done her budgeting, and that was all she could afford.
Hmm.
Now, it's only $16 and change, but when someone contributes all they can afford,
yeah.
I don't know that many people can say that.
Yeah, it's all about how much it matters to that individual person, and that's the kind of, I mean, those are the donations that are really special,
touching,
I think.
Touching.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to end that topic because we're going to be doing more of that next week.
Yeah.
713-526-5738. We do have open lines, and at this point, if you call, I can pretty much guarantee you'll get on the air for at least a couple of minutes. It's open forum. I just want to touch a little bit more on this article, and then we'll get to Muhammad. Statistics. The world's now. This is according to Oxfam, which is a British, mostly a British originated nonprofit, but it's kind of worldwide now. So they did a study and they came up with some numbers that 2,153 billionaires, so about 2,200 billionaires, have more wealth than 4.6 billion people. The 22 richest men have more wealth than all the women in Africa. The world's richest 1%, and now you're getting to people with a net worth of like $50 million and up. Which, you know, in modern terms doesn't seem like a lot. $1 million used to be a lot more money. But $50 million is still pretty good. And the world's richest 1% have more than twice as much wealth as 6.9 billion people. Now, the whole population of the planet is 7.5 billion.
Mm.
So that's kind of stunning. So obviously, we need a certain amount of wealth distribution. This goes back to financial stability, social stability, the recycling of money, which is just a store of value. One person, Nick Hanauer, has made this point in talks many times. There's only so much money he can spend. He can only buy so many clothes, so many cars, so many houses.
Right.
There's a limit to what a billionaire can recycle.
Yeah.
So, and we've lost Mohammed. I'm sorry. If you have a chance, call back. 713-526-5738.
And, you know,
yeah, let's talk on that for a minute, as long as we have an open line.
Well, I saw, I can't remember exactly what it was now, but I saw something, read something that was talking about how there's a lot of people who have difficulty actually visualizing even $1 million.
Yeah.
It's
a comprehension issue.
Yeah. Like,
and people, they've done studies on this, people who understand that there is a wealth distribution curve.
Right.
Have no idea how skewed it is to a small number of people with great wealth.
Yeah.
$1 billion, I once had a caller that helped clarify this for me, where he said, if you have $1 billion and you give away $1 million a year, it'll take 1,000 years to give that away.
Yeah.
I amplified on that, where if you're getting even a 1 or a 2% return on that $1 billion, you'll never be able to give it away at $1 million a year.
There's a free game in your browser. You can play in your browser on this website called itch.io, and it's got a bunch of different games on there, but there's this one that's sort of a thought exercise. It's you are Jeff Bezos or something, I think. And it's basically like those old text adventures from the 1980s.
Zork.
Yeah.
Yes, I loved that game.
Only you don't type anything in, you just click on links, but you are trying to give away all of Jeff Bezos' money.
Which he has about $65 billion, is by itself an incomprehensible thing.
Well, this game is a little older.
There are countries that would be happy with that.
Yeah. This game is a little older. I think it's somewhere in the realm of $30 million in the game.
$30 billion,
sorry.
Billion, okay.
I'm having trouble keeping it straight.
Yeah.
But you have to kind of try and get rid of all his money, because you wake up as Jeff Bezos and you're obviously like, well, this guy's
not gonna live forever.
Money. Yeah. And so you know you go on an adventure and you have to, you know, certain options
instead of collecting stuff, you have to give stuff.
Yeah. But the problem is, if you don't give it away fast enough, it comes back.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
Because even a minimal return on investment is faster than you can get rid of it.
Yeah. So, you know, if that interests you, you know, see if you can find that.
Okay. So we're going to have a caller in a minute, as soon as we kind of get that registered. And that may be our last caller. But if you want to call, we'll take a shot. 713-526-5738. I guess, Naboo, if you want to put this person on, Gary, is this the same Gary or a different Gary?
Oh, I'm another one.
Oh, well, thank you, Gary. You know, you can't tell the Garys apart just by the typing.
I'm enjoying the show. I just want to make a quick comment that I think my rule is voting for a third party in a primary, sir, just vote your ideology. Go for it. Do the best you can. Vote whatever your heart says. But in the final election, you have to decide, do you want a democratic-style future? Vote Democratic. If you want a Putin-style future, vote Republican. That's my rule of thumb.
Yeah, well, I basically agree with that.
And don't vote a third party in the final election. Vote in the primary.
Because unless you have runoffs or some equivalent, preferential ballots or something like that.
Sure.
You know, my poster boy for this is Paul LePage in Maine, who was elected governor twice and never exceeded the election percentage of Adolf Hitler. I mean, I think he got like 38 or 39% because it was a three-way race and there was no mandatory runoff. And that's what you're confronted with when, I agree with you, in the primary, vote your philosophy.
Yes.
In the election, vote for the person you want to win.
We need to determine the future, and, you know, I think, what kind of future do you want? Make a decision. Vote accordingly. But don't vote for a third party in the real election, because you're wasting your vote.
Which goes back to the issue that I've really had for many years, which is the third parties that they want to run a presidential candidate and a governor candidate and and a Senate candidate, but they don't want to run a mayor candidate. They don't want to run a city council candidate. They don't want to run a Harris County judge candidate. And it's like, you're going to start at the top and work down, or you're going to start at the bottom and work up. Do we want to see how you will actually govern? Do we want to see you roll out at least efforts at policies, even if they are not passed because you have other people that outnumber you?
I mean, if I can cut in here, I'll say this, you know.
And by the way, this is Andrew Ferguson, who's my guest co-host.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the just because the Green Party is the one I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
The National Party, you know, we run down ballot candidates all the time. But in order to run down ballot candidates, you need to have people who are able and willing to stand for those offices. Now, the Democratic and Republican parties have the advantage there in that a lot more people are comfortable running with those parties because they're more established, they've got more resources, and they think they've got a better chance of winning.
But you're a dedicated Green Party. I'm going to let you talk in a second, Gary. Just let me make this point.
Yeah.
You're a dedicated Green partisan.
Mm-hmm.
You're not running. I'm not putting you on the spot here. I'm just saying people like you, young people like you, dedicated partisans. Hey, you guys can work. There is a party organization. There is a website. There is actually a party organization in Harris County, the Harris County Green Party, for example. You guys could work to run candidates down ballot. You just don't.
Well, I mean, you know, it comes down to, where are you in your life? Are you able to run? Are you in a position where, you know, do you have the time to dedicate everything to that? And
But
people do.
And they do it for the Republicans. They do it for the Democrats. They do it for the Libertarians.
And I hope to have the time to dedicate to that at some point. And I hope to have it soon. But, you know, it depends on how fast I can get my college degree done, basically.
Yeah.
You know? And
Gary, we interrupted you, so I want to give you a shot here.
That's okay. No, I agree with him in a sense. I understand where he's coming from, and the ideology, your philosophy and ideology is commendable. Just consider that the end result, you're talking kind of at a tactical level.
Yeah.
The end result is strategic. What kind of a country do you want to live in?
I like that.
And that's
tactical versus strategic.
In the final election. Third party, you're kind of diluting your vote.
Because in some elections, the choice is binary.
We're in a binary system, that's right.
At certain levels, that's just the case.
That's the way it works. Well, enjoy the show. It's a great conversation.
Thank you very much. Okay, we got to go. Think Wing Radio, be back next week. We got 2 seconds, so have a good week.
Get even more from your KPFT listening experience by checking out our HD2 stream. New and improved, get acquainted with our revamped weekly schedule now at kpft.org. Nationally syndicated favorites like Democracy Now!, Flashpoints, and Rising Up with Sonali remain. Our HD2 schedule now features more local shows throughout the entire day, including a stellar mix of public affairs, music, comedy, and Spanish language programming, created and produced right here at KPFT. Don't miss a second on HD2. Mouse on over to kpft.org or on TuneIn Radio. KPFT, Houston.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sol, Radio Pacifica. Al KPFT 90.1 FM. Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawad hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy Kissing Scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye prarthna kare.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho giới lãnh đạo được biết. Chúng tôi là Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發, 我們是侯思俊的 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
Hum taqat ke samne bhi sachai se bolte hain. Hum hain Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace.